It's time now for KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. KMTS Connections connects you to everything that matters in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. Once again, it's Gabe from the KMTS Morning Show, along with Blythe Chapman and Carrie Auk from the Riverbridge Regional Center. And first of all, good afternoon, ladies. Thanks for stopping by. And the first thing, I guess, might be important to talk about, we have had a couple conversations, I guess, over the years about Riverbridge Center. But most natural, obvious first question is, what is Riverbridge Regional Center?
Riverbridge Regional Center is a nonprofit organization, a child advocacy center. Our Child Advocacy Center serves four counties, Garfield, Pitkin, Rio Blanco, and Eagle County. So we serve a really large area. And we respond to allegations of child abuse. We work really closely with law enforcement, victim advocates, medical, mental health, and child welfare in order to make sure that kids are able to tell their stories of abuse in a safe environment. And then we also work very closely with prosecutors in order to ensure that perpetrators are prosecuted.
So you said Garfield, Pitkin, Eagle, and Rio Blanco County.
That's correct.
That's interesting, particularly from the law enforcement side of things. That actually includes more than one judicial district. So I imagine, you know, I'm always thinking, you know, behind the scenes, and maybe nobody else is interested or, you know, thinks about these things, but from a logistics standpoint, how do you work with the different judicial districts? Because I'm sure everyone has their own operating procedures and that whole thing.
Sure, that's a really good question. You know, certainly Garfield, Pitkin, and Rio Blanco are under the 9th Judicial District, so they're working pretty closely together in those areas. And, you know, Eagle County works really closely with those counties as well. As you can imagine, there's that area on the 82 corridor,
right,
that
sure.
is...
A lot of overlap.
Exactly. So they have to work closely together.
And it sounds like you'll actually, starting next year, be working with different district attorneys in both of those judicial districts, actually.
Exactly, yeah.
Mark Hurlbro took a job in Colorado Springs, is that right?
I'm not sure.
Anyway... It sounds like it'll be somebody different anyway. So.
Yeah, Bruce Brown has been elected in the 5th Judicial District.
Okay. And Carrie, I guess I should have mentioned before, Blythe is actually the director of the Riverbridge Regional Center, and Carrie is a forensic interviewer. So I guess you might say you're kind of in the trenches when it comes to this particular organization.
I am. I'm working directly with the children. To be able to, as Blythe said, provide an environment where they can talk about their experiences. And a forensic interview is a very specific way of posing questions in a very neutral manner and developmentally appropriate. So based upon the developmental and age level of each child, I would adjust kind of how I speak to them.
Television has probably brought the word forensics really to the forefront for the last, you know, I guess 10 years or so, you know, when CSI really became popular. And there are a number of other shows now on any number of different networks. You know, what are they down to? CSI Hoboken now, I think, is the newest. But forensics is really a word that we hear a lot. And in it's a part of popular culture, although certainly forensics has been around. If you believe a lot of the stuff you see on some of those investigatory procedural shows for over 100 years. Well, and actually, Sherlock Holmes, I mean, really,
right?
A lot of forensics involved there and a lot of what he did, right?
Yes, yes.
And do you know, I'm curious, what is the definition of forensics? It's something about using science to investigate things or something along those lines?
You know, I should have checked dictionary.com but before I came in. I'll remember to do that next time.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
I don't know the actual definition, but people have kind of brought that up to me before when I tell them what I do.
Sure.
And they think it has to do with something, you know, after someone perhaps has died, because that's kind of how they show it on TV. They're re-examining a death situation or something like that. But it does have to do with going back. An incident has occurred in time, and you're going back and trying to figure out the facts about what actually happened.
And I think, was it back in the 80s when there was a lot of concern about well-meaning therapists introducing false memories during the therapy process? So when you talk about trying to ask neutral questions to try and get factual information, is that kind of what you're talking about, kind of a response to that?
Exactly, exactly. And actually, the whole National Child Advocacy Center movement came out of what you're referring to in the mid-80s, where there were some investigations of abuse that were pretty badly botched because of bad questioning techniques. And so this has arisen from that, to be able to ask non-leading and to not repeat the question so many times, especially for young children.
At the same time, isn't that a common way of kind of determining? I know, for instance, when a suspect is being interviewed, you ask questions a couple different ways to see if the answer is really the same. Mm. And does that come up in your interview process as well?
The two types of interviewing techniques are pretty different. So the idea,
which I guess makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. The idea with a child interview really is to limit the number of times they're questioned. That said, children who are speaking about an incident will perhaps tell it in a different way at different times, but many of the details, people who are listening to this incident will realize, you know, that many of the details are quite consistent. So the story kind of comes together in that way.
What is your background? Have you always been a forensic interviewer with this type of organization?
I have not. I have done forensic interviewing actually in the mid-90s in Portland, Oregon. Had a couple of years of experience doing that. But between the mid-90s and now, I spent 13 years at the Roaring Fork School District in the Family Resource Centers. So that is an agency that's really focused on children's health, physical and mental health.
Okay. So still dealing with kids,
yes,
if you will,
right,
just in different ways.
That's right.
Okay. Blythe, I'm curious. Now, Riverbridge has not been around for very long. It's been a few years. What was the process before Riverbridge came to this area, before this organization was here?
We're really lucky to have Riverbridge now because of what the process used to be. And that's not to say that law enforcement and human services did a bad job before we existed. But in the past, it was a lot harder for law enforcement and human services to coordinate together and to make investigations run smoothly. They kind of worked within their own agencies or process without necessarily involving the other agencies. So what might happen is a child discloses abuse to a family member, and that gets reported to the Department of Human Services. And a caseworker comes out and interviews the child. And then they call law enforcement because they realize that law enforcement needs to be involved. And a law enforcement officer will come out and interview the child again. And then it might go to the district attorney's office for prosecution, where an attorney may interview the child again. And that's only three instances of interviewing. There are some cases where a child might be interviewed much more than that, you know, four or five, six times in the process of going from investigation to prosecution and a trial. So our process allows for an interview to happen hopefully one time. Sometimes it's one or two times. But it involves all of those agencies. We really coordinate all those agencies and get them all together in the same room on the same day for an interview. And it's recorded so that a child does have to testify now and again. However, the forensic interview recording really is the evidence. It really is used in a trial to show exactly what happened without the child having to repeat everything.
Again, we're chatting this afternoon with Blythe Chapman, the director of Riverbridge Regional Center, and Carrie Ock, who is a forensic interviewer. We will talk. Actually, there are a couple different events coming up over the next couple months that you might be interested in attending that River Bridge is sponsoring. Also, some changes for the River Bridge Regional Center that we'll talk about in just a couple minutes. But first, a quick break. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, we're chatting with Carrie Ock and Blythe Chapman from the River Bridge Regional Center. And again, they're a child advocacy organization that steps in and becomes active, advocates for kids that are involved in abuse cases in Garfield, Pitkin, Rio Blanco, and Eagle counties. And kind of form the bridge, I guess you might say, pun intended, between law enforcement, investigators, and kids and their families. So Blythe, there's actually a transition recently for River Bridge Regional Center from a national organization to an actual local organization.
That's correct. We actually have been around for almost 5 years now, but we started under a national nonprofit, and this past June we broke away from that national nonprofit and now are 100% local. So all the money that we raise to support our community child advocacy center stays here and supports our local child advocacy center.
So I guess to put it in business terms, it's no longer a franchise, if you will.
Sure.
And so dues and fees and so on and so forth are no longer required to be paid to a national organization. Is that, I mean,
yeah,
I realize I'm stripping
that.
It down, but
we do actually belong to, we are accredited through National Children's Alliance, and we do pay dues to National Children's Alliance as well as Colorado Children's Alliance, which is important organizations for a child advocacy center to be involved with. It really defines who we are as a child advocacy center.
Okay, so kind of like any, like in Carrie's previous job, you know, all school districts have to be accredited in some way by, mm-hmm. I think most schools in this area are accredited by Northwestern, but regardless, it's some kind of certification that says, yes, you are doing what you need to do and following all the right procedures and steps and all of that sort of thing.
Exactly. It also allows us to obtain funding under those national organizations.
Which is helpful.
It
which
is.
Which is always helpful.
It is.
Let's talk a little bit about the need for an organization like River Bridge Regional Center. Mm-hmm. You know, any hearing about sexual abuse or any abuse of kids is too much. And yet at the same time, I think a lot of it goes on and we really don't hear much about it. How many active cases right now is River Bridge Regional Center dealing with?
Well, it's hard to define active. Every case is different, and we will be involved with a family through the process. However, some kids come through and they just do a forensic interview and then we're not involved any longer. However, there are others that the investigation is ongoing and then it goes to court and we'll be involved through that process. What I can tell you is that over the past 5 years, we have seen over 550 children come through River Bridge Regional Center for a forensic interview, primarily in regards to allegations of sexual abuse. This year.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop you right there.
Sure.
Just because you would think that physical abuse would be the most prevalent, and that is, you're saying that's not the case, or at least as it relates to River Bridge Regional Center.
Exactly. Primarily, we see sexual abuse come through River Bridge Regional Center because those are those cases that are most difficult to investigate and prosecute, and so that's very important that those cases go through the process of a child advocacy center where the interviews are recorded, where the children are given the utmost respect and child-friendly environment through that process, and where all of those agencies are working really closely together. We do see physical abuse cases, but we just don't see all of them that come through.
Okay. Why are they so difficult to investigate and prosecute?
Sexual abuse is an abuse that kids don't always disclose. There's a lot of shame and guilt involved in sexual abuse. Kids are often nervous to disclose about what's been going on in their families, and it can be really, really difficult situation for them. So given that, kids often don't disclose right away. We're talking about, for the most part, cold cases where an instance or an abuse occurred over a period of time, a year ago or 2 years ago, or maybe sometimes even longer. And then we're going on, you know, a child's report, you know, and it's difficult for juries to fully grasp that this could happen, that there are perpetrators out there that look like good people because they're good at what they do. And it's hard to imagine that they would actually do these kinds of things.
I know. Go ahead, Carrie.
Yeah, I would just also add to that, that particularly one thing that might be surprising to people is probably over 90% of perpetrators in sexual abuse cases are known to their victim. So that stranger danger thing, although it creates headlines and it's a horrifying thing when it happens, it's actually much more rare. And much more common is that a perpetrator of sexual abuse would be quite well known, perhaps within the family, to a child. And that makes it kind of doubly hard for the child to talk about what happened to them.
You and I are on the same page. That's actually exactly what I was going to ask about. The question was going to be, I know in terms of sexual abuse in general, it's 90%. And I was going to ask, is it the same mm-hmm. when we're talking about kids? And right. clearly it is.
Yep, for sure.
Of those 550 interviews, length of time that those kids are involved with Riverbridge Regional Center varies from just the single interview, Blythe, to a month's long trial of some kind?
Sometimes even over a year. You know, we were just talking about how difficult it is to prosecute these cases. It takes a while to get through the court process. The district attorney's office works real hard to make sure that the cases are well taken care of, so they're not just jumping into a trial. So, you know, there are some cases that stay on our case review agenda that we do twice a month with all of our partners, that an interview occurred, you know, last year, but we have a trial coming up. Sometimes it can be longer than that because a child remains involved with us on mental health level. We have a mental health consultant on staff. Megan Hurley is actually employed by Garfield County Department of Human Services, but she works with kids for a period of time, and sometimes that can be quite some time, depending on what their needs are.
Carrie, explain the difference between the contact that Megan has with these kids from a mental health, mm-hmm. from a counseling standpoint, mm-hmm. to the contact you have with them from the forensic interview standpoint.
Sure. Like I said, the forensic interview, the purpose really is to just have a pretty limited experience with the child. So one or possibly two interviews. And like I said, you know, very neutral kind of fact-finding type questions.
It is really not your job to be a support for the child or to try and counsel them.
That's
in other
right.
words, you're just trying to find as many facts as you can to preserve the, I guess what they would call on TV is prosecutorial integrity of the case, or words to that effect, right?
Yes, for sure. And you know, it's okay for me to be supportive, and I hope that I do, that I am that way with children. But it's not my job to, you know, express a lot of empathy or sympathy for their situation. I'm remaining a, you know, a warm, friendly, yet fairly neutral adult that they can talk to.
Blythe, again, we kind of started this segment talking about the fact that Riverbridge Regional Center is now a local nonprofit as opposed to part of a national nonprofit organization. So does that mean that it's important to receive donations and support from local businesses and individuals?
Absolutely. We need our community's help now more than ever. The Child Advocacy Center model is built on the community collaboration with all of our agency partners as well as our community, other nonprofits, and everyone that is involved in the community. It has a responsibility to keep our kids safe. And we need our community's support and help now more than ever. We are in the process of building our financial stability for years to come. And if folks are thinking about donating to a nonprofit, you know, as we get into the holiday season, this is really the perfect time to think about River Bridge Regional Center because we really need the help.
And it, you have a website?
We do. It's www.riverbridgerc.org.
Okay. And folks can learn more and find contact information there.
They sure can. And they can now donate online as well.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Again, that website is riverbridgerc.org. And for folks that may not have access to a computer or prefer to actually have some kind of in-kind human contact, in-person human contact, they can just give you a call at the main number?
Absolutely. Our number is 945-5195. We'd love for folks to give us a call and learn more about River Bridge. And we also are very open to showing folks the Advocacy Center. I think it really means a lot more when people are able to see the center and get a tour and see what it means to walk through our doors. So we'd be more than happy to give anyone a tour at any time. We just need a phone call ahead of time and to talk about it so that we can schedule it.
Again, phone number is 945-5195, and the website is riverbridgerc, as in riverbridgeregionalcenter.org. We'll take one final break, and we'll talk about those upcoming events in just a couple minutes. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, we're chatting this afternoon with Blythe Chapman, who is the director of River Bridge Regional Center in Glenwood, and Carrie Auk, who is a forensic interviewer. As I mentioned earlier, a couple events coming up that folks might be interested in attending. The first one is next Monday, December 10th at Sopras Elementary. The title of this one is 10 Tips to Prevent Sexual Abuse. You know, Carrie, prevention is an interesting term to use in this context. And what, I guess, define what types of prevention you'll be talking about at Monday's event?
You know, the prevention efforts that we do are really focused on the children and the parents part. You know, we really, as you say, are not involved in the adult, maybe offender side of that. And there are people who are working on that. But this class, for example, is really aimed at parents and what parents can do to kind of abuse-proof, I guess, their children in a way. So there are ways to talk with your children. It's a lot about creating awareness. Talk with your children about potential situations and how they might respond. One tip, actually, that Megan Hurley, who's conducting the class on Monday, always talks about is making sure that your children know proper body names for the parts of their bodies, just something kind of as simple as that. Creating a family culture where there aren't secrets and the kids in the family know they can come to mom and dad with anything they want to talk about.
So it's not just solely about tips to prevent sexual abuse, but also maybe ways to explain to the kids that it's okay to talk about these things if they happen to you.
And, that's right.
And encourage quick, prompt reporting.
That's right.
Which obviously would help out on the you know, prosecution side of things.
Exactly.
Again, this happens Monday night from 6:30 to 8:30 at Sopras Elementary in Glenwood, and it is free for anyone that wants to attend. Is it appropriate for kids, or is this a parents' class, a parents' event?
Mm-hmm. Yep, this one is for parents. So, you know, throughout the school year, something we want to get into doing more, and we have done a little bit. We're working with the counselors in the schools, specifically on programs that are aimed right for the children. But I would say Monday night's class is really parent-directed.
And will she also talk a little bit about, you know, you mentioned a term earlier, age-appropriate. Obviously, you know, different ages of kids have different knowledge of their own bodies and of other people's bodies. And so I assume that maybe some of Monday night's talk will be directed toward, you know, what is appropriate for different mm-hmm. age groups.
That's right. Yep. That's right. She will go over, it would be a very different conversation that you start having with a toddler versus a child maybe who's already in middle or high school. So that's definitely something she covers.
Okay. Again, that's 6:30 to 8:30 Monday night, December 10th at Soperus Elementary School in Glenwood. Again, it's a free event, and any adults are welcome to attend, or any parents, I guess, would be a better way of putting that.
Mm-hmm. That's
or
right.
Parent or guardian, to use the
yes,
school term.
Parent or guardian. I think if you're an adult and you, that's right, and you have children in your life that you are, you know, care for in any way, I think it would be super helpful to learn these things.
Does Riverbridge Regional Center also work with, for instance, law enforcement agencies and other folks, that first responders, if you will, that may come into contact with sexual abuse? Just obviously not in depth, but mm-hmm. to make them understand a little bit more what's going on in the child's mind?
Yes, for sure. That's also would fall under kind of our community outreach prevention efforts. We do speak with groups of law enforcement, police departments, sheriffs, deputies, people who might be first on the scene, and talk to them about what are the best ways to maybe speak with parents and children when an allegation maybe has just arisen.
You know, to come back to the forensic word that, you know, we started talking about at the beginning, again, a lot of those procedural crime dramas that are so popular now, one of the things that comes up so often is you make sure that the first responders know, particularly, I mean, it's always a murder when it's on TV, right?
Right.
You know, not to contaminate the scene.
Yes.
And so is that something that you talk about, you know, again, to talk about introducing false memories and that sort of thing?
Yes, that's right. And that's a word that law enforcement can use as well in this situation. You can contaminate a potential interview as well by the types of questions that maybe a first responder might ask that are perhaps leading or assuming something ahead of time.
To the same degree, maybe even to a greater degree, are our parents susceptible to that? You know, and maybe this is some of the stuff that Megan will talk about Monday night, too. Obviously, you know, as a parent or guardian, if your child came to you, you know, with a story of sexual or any other kind of abuse, obviously you're going to be concerned and you're going to want to try and support your kid as much as you can. Mm-hmm. But are there certain things that parents should be aware of, either to or not to ask?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, absolutely. And we do understand how hard that may be if your child is coming to you and talking about such an experience, how hard it would be to not perhaps want to get a lot of information about what happened. But we would advise to please, you know, go ahead and get the support that you would need. And that means, you know, calling law enforcement or calling the Department of Human Services for some extra help, and they can guide you through the process. And we would just try to encourage parents to be always a listening ear to their children, and so that their children always know they can talk about anything with them, and just to not do too many questions, just more, you know, kind of open-ended, what happened, those types of things.
Okay. Again, 10 tips to prevent sexual abuse Monday night at Soperus Elementary in Glenwood, facilitated by Megan Hurley from 6:30 to 8:30. I assume probably information on that on the website too?
There is.
Okay, which is riverbridgerc.org. And then in the last couple minutes here, you've actually got another event coming up on February 16th.
Yeah, we are very early in the preliminary stages of a big fundraiser. We're partnering with two other nonprofits. So Riverbridge will be working with Cooking Matters and Early Childhood Network to put on a fundraiser to raise money for all three nonprofits. It is going to be, for sure, on February 16th at the Orchard in Carbondale. We'll have silent auction. We'll have music. We'll have great food. And we should have tickets for sale and have a link on our website to those tickets within the next week.
And again, that website is riverbridgerc.org. And again, that event, I guess you might say, mark your calendars.
Save the date.
That's right. February 16th at the Orchard in Carbondale, and we'll look forward to hearing more about that. Again, in the meantime, Monday night's event is entirely free to any parent or guardian, anyone that has contact with kids that they care about. 6:30 to 8:30 at Soperus Elementary, and it's 100% free to anyone that would like to attend. So Blythe, Carrie, anything else that folks should know about Riverbridge Regional Center or anything we talked about today?
I'd just like to say thank you so much for the opportunity. We want the community to know about us and to be aware of how they can help.
Carrie?
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
You're very welcome. Again, the website is riverbridgerc.org. And if you'd like to call them, ask questions, maybe discuss anything we talked about today, or maybe schedule a tour of their facility. The phone number is 945-5195. You've been listening to KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30. It's another reason we are the most listened to radio station from Rifle to Aspen.